Greetings and salutations. This is the Untitled Joshcast, episode number 14. My name is Josh Gershman. I am joined, as always, by my co-host and co-Josh, Josh Hammond.
How's it going?
This is our weekly podcast where we discuss what has been going on in our lives and try to have a little bit of fun while doing it. To interact with the show and for updates on future episodes and more fun stuff, you can find us on both Twitter and Instagram at JoshCastPod. You can also find us on Twitch at twitch.tv/UntitledJoshCast. If you like what you hear and you are interested in supporting the show financially, you can do so at patreon.com/UntitledJoshCast. Before we get into today's episode, we've got a little bit of housekeeping. I want to touch on a couple things that we have been talking about for the past couple weeks. Most recently, our last episode was all about science fiction and alternate history and works in that genre from specifically non-white male authors. I posted this on our Twitter account earlier today, Sunday. BuzzFeed put up a great article that was like 20 books from black authors in science fiction and fantasy. A lot of the authors that we talked about, Octavia Butler, Colson Whitehead, N.K. Jemisin, those are the three I remember because those are three that we talked about last week. But it was a great list, certainly some that I hadn't had on my to-be-read list. One of the things I found really just kind of great about this whole thing is it's always a different Octavia Butler book. Like, you and I talked about three last week, and the one on this list is a different one altogether. I think that just speaks to, obviously, like, the breadth of what her output is and just how kind of well-regarded she is in the genre as an author, as a black author. But yeah, you can check it out on our Twitter account, twitter.com/JoshCastPod. It was a great list.
Something else that I thought kind of related that was pretty cool. I don't know if you saw the New York Times nonfiction bestseller list this week, but if you get a chance, glance at it. It's all of the books, you know, that support, you know, the movement that's happening. It's like, you know, White Fragility. It's How to Be an Anti-Racist. And like literally the top 10 were all books that fall into that. And I thought that that was really cool that like, you can tell that people are actually picking up books and like, you know, educating themselves as they should be during this time.
For sure. I did see that. And that, you know, I think it's great for those authors that their books are going to be read and by people that, you know, we hope that are certainly paying attention. I also saw something online earlier. I don't know if you've been on Netflix recently, but the first time you open up Netflix, this happened to me yesterday. I was going to watch something. It pops up with like a very like a kind of a whole collection under the Black Lives Matter umbrella, like a civil rights umbrella. And it's a collection of stand-up specials and movies and all kinds of things that obviously like are really important and really appropriate right now. And it's just another example of for people that don't like the common refrain of like, well, of course I support you, but I don't know where to start. It's here. Like it's not hard to find. And I think it's, you know, it's important to like actually put in the work. Like if you feel under equipped to have those conversations, either to people who need to hear them or amongst friends or colleagues, you know, that material is there for you. It's readily accessible.
That's cool.
There were two other book things. I'm trying to remember what is my brain is all scattered today. There's at least one other book thing. If there's a second thing, I'll come back to it. The one other book thing was I mentioned last week the conversation surrounding the publishing paid me hashtag. So that was happening over the weekend. We recorded on Sunday. On Monday or Tuesday of this past week, there was a couple of articles that I actually written up about this whole conversation that was happening, namely one in The Guardian that I saw. That was really good. One of the things that was brought up on the Twitter side of the conversation was this author, Chip Cheek. And as the story goes, he was paid $800,000 for the advance on his debut novel, if that sounds like a lot of money to you, it is a lot of money. But also, if you actually were paying attention to that conversation last weekend, you would see how astronomically high that is compared to what Black authors and other authors of color and mainly women were being paid. That was nowhere near $800,000 for their debut. And, you know, it's not Chip's fault, right? Like it's the industry. And that was what the publishing paid me hashtag was trying to promote, that like the industry itself is very flawed. It's the author and their representation and their agents to do their, to get the most money they can. It's a business, right? But, you know, he in his kind of response, he was like, yes, this is what I got. And it was just, it was a surprise to me as well. But, you know, he's, at least on Twitter, was, you know, vocal in his support of other authors, that like they should be getting this kind of money as well. It shouldn't, like, there shouldn't be a difference between what white authors and what authors of color get in terms of their advances. Anyways, it was a really interesting conversation that was happening last week. And like I said, there were a couple of articles that came up about it within the past week.
So I just looked. You can buy this book. It's called Cape May. You can buy it on Amazon at this point for $13.49. It looks like it retails at $26.99. So that's a fuck ton of books at $26.99 just to break even. Like, I can't.
Good point.
Imagine offering a debut author that much money, risking that much just to break ahead. Like, I wonder what it was that made them even think that, like, this is literally the Michael Jordan of authors right now.
One of the things I saw, and again, like, this is me remembering something I saw a week ago, so take it with a grain of salt, was that the public, like, it was an, I think it was like a new publisher, and that someone, again, this was a conversation on Twitter, that the publisher themselves were, they had money to burn. I don't mean that in a bad sense, but like they were flush with cash, which is what I think what the conversation was. Now, that, again, that doesn't excuse things. That doesn't mean like, I have no idea what they were offering other authors for their works, let alone for their debuts. But you make a great point. Like $800,000 is a lot to make up in a publishing industry that is struggling, as like hardcover books, as like real tactile books are kind of losing out in the long term, certainly to ebooks and things like that. It's very interesting. That book itself is coming out in paperback, so certainly it did well enough to get a paperback run that's coming out actually in a couple weeks.
$29,629 at $27.
Wow. That's a lot of books. That was really fascinating. The other little bit, getting back to episodes from 2 weeks ago in the world of video games, the PlayStation 5 was revealed earlier this week / last week. It looks super cool and futuristic. It looks like a giant router. So like I'm into it. It's going to be fun. The future of video games, man. It's going to be cool.
Second chapter of Horizon.
Yes, that's right. The Horizon franchise is getting another game. Oh man, that's so good. This is where I need like time, you know, free time.
Yes.
Because I would love one. I have played that game a couple of times all the way through. I started it again, not recently, but like within the past 6 months. But then I kind of put it down to probably start over something else that I have already played once and or twice or three times. That game is just so good. Like I wish I could experience that again for the first time, because it's just one of those stories that the beats and like the twists and turns and the surprises are so good. It's just so good. I'm going to think about it right now. But anyway, that franchise is getting another game, of course it was going to happen, but now it's actually happening. And it'll be out next year, probably next year. Okay, so we'll get into today's episode, actually. And what we're going to do, as you've probably noticed, is some more fun facts and trivia. We had a lot of fun doing this the last time out, and we have pulled some more facts. I think we have 7 apiece, And then some fun stuff at the end. So, who wants to go first?
Well, you just spoke about video games, and I have one related to video games. So I'm going to go first.
Perfect timing.
So apparently Donkey Kong, originally, you know, arcade games, first place we saw Mario make an appearance, but Donkey Kong got his name because the creator of the game believed donkey meant stupid in English. And he wanted to convey he wanted to convey the impression that the character was just a stupid ape.
Okay. That's kind of mean, but okay. You do you. All right. The first three on my list are actually all about Flag Day. So today that we're recording this is June 14th, which is Flag Day. So my first three are all United States flag related. Here's the first one. You probably recognize the flag. It's got 50 stars. It's got 13 stripes on it. You probably also know that the first flag, well, like, all right, there's a couple other flags. The first flag that featured stars and stripes was 13 stars in a circle and then 13 stripes, the red and white alternating stripes for the 13 colonies. And then the stripes were represented there as well. Did you know, however, that when they got to states 14 and 15, which were Vermont and Kentucky in 1791 and 1792, that there was actually a flag with 15 stars and 15 stripes? They were like, yeah, we'll just keep adding. It's going to be totally fine. They realized pretty quickly that they were in over their heads. And after 1818, so for like 1791 to 1818, the flag had 15 stars and 15 stripes. After 1818, they went back to the 13 stripe model and then just kept adding stars, which in retrospect, that was the correct choice. Could you imagine a flag with 50 stripes? Like, that's insane.
That'd be crazy.
That's too many stripes.
A lot of stripes. It'd be really big. I had no idea. I had never heard that. It's fascinating. It's the stuff they don't teach you in high school. Not connected to the flag in any way. There are three cities that are connected by being sister cities. I don't know if, you know, everyone out there knows what a sister city is, but like when you're in a town, you basically form a relationship with a city someplace else so that if they have like a natural disaster or you help with tourism, things like that, you work together to build each of the cities from different places, kind of. There is a group of three called the League of Extraordinary Communities, and they consist of Boring Oregon, Dull Scotland, and Blandshire, Australia.
That's amazing. Boring Oregon, really? Okay. Like, forgive me, it's probably someone's name, and with all due respect to Mr. and Mrs. Boring, it's not a great town name.
It's definitely not.
Okay, back to the flag. You'll recognize the U.S. flag as the colors are red, white, and blue. Do you know that those colors have meaning behind them?
I believe I knew that the red represented some post-war blood of soldiers thing.
You're not far off.
All right.
So the red symbolizes hardiness and valor. The white, don't laugh, symbolizes purity and innocence. And the blue represents vigilance, perseverance, and justice.
I wasn't even close.
So you were not far off to like the actual 2020 meanings. Hmm. I think that's just swell. I think people in the early days of our nation wanted something to symbolize what they were doing and the revolution and all that other great stuff. I think that's great. I think if you take what they wanted the colors to mean and then you look at how many of the founding fathers owned slaves, followed by how we treated Native Americans, followed by how we jailed up all the Japanese in World War II, followed by the ongoing fight for civil rights, followed by. I think it's a little bit laughable. I think like maybe one day we'll have colors that mean something we're proud of. It's just, I read that and I was like, sure, I'm sure someone out there believes that, but it's just like, it's very topical right now as like as Black Lives Matter protests are taking over the world and all aimed squarely at what's happening here. I thought it was a little poignant.
It's pretty interesting. Not quite there yet. If it helps to pep you up, I'll give you something completely unrelated to that.
Hit me.
And that is that Colombian drug lord Pablo Escobar, well, he had 4 hippos that used to live on his estate. I'm not done. This gets better.
Keep going.
When he died in 1993, the authorities there determined that it was just way too much of a hassle to move these hippos. So they were just left there. They just abandoned these hippos. And eventually over time, like hippos often do, they bred and they escaped, and it has become an evasive problem. They're like a problem species in Colombia, like just rogue hippos because of Pablo Escobar just running around.
Of all the ways in which Reagan's war on drugs failed, this has to be on the top of the list. Yes, right?
This is on the top of my list of favorite facts I've ever come across for this podcast.
That's amazing. All right. Well, this is going to be good because then my next and last flag fact for you today is actually one that you will really like because it's about the moon and about space. So you've probably seen both you personally as well as you out there in the world. Very famous like photo and video of Neil Armstrong planting the flag on the moon on July 20th, 1969. A great moment in our country's history, a great moment for NASA and for space travel, and just it's amazing. Did you know that there are actually 6 flags on the moon, 6 U.S. flags?
I did not know that there were 6 U.S. flags on the moon.
Boy, do I have a story for you. So the other 5 flags... Well, so sorry, Neil Armstrong, he was on Apollo 11. That was that first mission they landed on the moon. The other 5 flags were from 5 other Apollo missions, 12, 14, 15, 16, and 17. But there's even more fun moon flag stuff. The flag that went up for Apollo 17 was actually the flag that was in the room at the Mission Operations Control Room in Houston. So Apollo 17 was the last mission in the Apollo program. And so like as a way to commemorate that, they took the flag off the wall and flew it to space.
That's interesting.
I think that's just amazing. It is cool.
I can't confirm this. I didn't Google this fact, but bonus fact that may or may not be true. I've heard that the original flag and maybe the flags I didn't know existed are actually blank now because they've been washed out because of their location where they are, like the sun or something.
Oh, that's interesting.
Is brighter. And so now they don't have like color or symbol or anything. Huh. So they're just
all right. All right. Josh and Josh are clearly busy reporting a podcast right now. So if anyone out there wants to look that up and let us know whether it's true or not, let us know. In the meantime, it's up to you. You're next on your next today.
All right. Well, let's go with this one just because I think it's fun. The mayor of an Alaskan town, I'm going to try to say this, Talkeetna. Let's go with Talkeetna. Oh. If you live in Talkeetna and your town is not called Talkeetna, feel free to follow us on Twitter and tell us so. I'd appreciate it. Anyway.
Yes, but also when you do that, you have to record yourself saying the proper pronunciation and then include that in the tweet. That's going to be really important.
That sounds perfect. The point of this is that Talkeetna, their mayor's name is Stubbs, and that seems like a very normal name to have, you know, if you're the mayor of an Alaskan town. It's totally normal. He's been that mayor since July 1997. The thing that makes him unique is he is a cat.
What kind of cat?
I didn't ask. I wanted to respect his privacy.
Okay. I don't know how to follow that, but I'm going to try. So so here's next, the next one on my list. You probably know this, that I Will Always Love You was not written by Whitney Houston, that it was in fact written by Dolly Parton.
I did know that.
Do you know who the song was written about?
I do not know that.
Oh, okay. Well, here is good. So the song was written by Dolly Parton in 1974. She wrote it about this singer and TV host and partner of hers at the time, Porter Wagoner.
Huh.
And so they had a like working relationship for about 5 years. She was on his TV show, and then she decided that she wanted to leave and go do other things. And there was a bit of drama about that. Like, he was a little upset. There was, you know, feelings were hurt. And so her response to that situation was to write this like really moving and emotional song about how she felt about him and their relationship and their working relationship.
That's cool.
And then it was used 20 years later in a great film
called The Bodyguard.
Sure was.
Well, while we're on the subject of very strong women, let's talk about two women, one of which is one of my favorite women of all time, Amelia Earhart, and her friend Eleanor Roosevelt, and how one time they were really bored at a White House event, so they snuck out, commandeered an airplane, and just went for a joyride in Baltimore.
That is just the kind of thing that the two of them would do.
They're just up to shenanigans all the time.
Bonnie and Clyde before Bonnie and Clyde.
That's true. Amelia Earhart is my favorite Kansan of all time.
Wait, not Bonnie and Clyde. Who am I thinking of? Thelma and Louise. They were Thelma and Louise before Thelma and Louise.
Those are two very different endings that you just came up with there.
Yes, they sure are. That's great. That's a great story. Okay. Next. How much do you love the smell of rain?
It's enjoyable. It's an 8 out of 10.
Do you know what you're actually smelling when you are smelling rain, though?
No, but I'm concerned that you're going to tell me and I'm going to not enjoy that.
Well, I am going to tell you, but you don't need to be concerned. So when you smell rain, it's actually a combination of chemical reactions of two different compounds. The first is oils that are secreted by plants when it gets really dry. So again, like the smell of rain after it's been dry for a long time, it's those oils that are on trees and grass and really anything that's green that hasn't been rained on in a while is one part of it. The other part is bacteria that grows in the soil. So the combination of those two things is called something called petrichor, which was coined by two Australian scientists in the 60s. And so like that specific scent of rain is those two things, that chemical reaction between the rain and the oils on the foliage and the bacteria in the soil.
Interesting.
There you go.
Petrichor sounds like a Christian metal band.
It might also be a Christian metal band, but it's also the smell of rain.
All right. Dual meaning. I found this to be really interesting. I didn't know this. I knew a lot of things about him, but I didn't know that the reason that Mr. Rogers would always say out loud that he was feeding his fish was because at one point in his career, a young blind viewer wrote a letter to him asking that he would do so because she was always worried that the fish weren't well.
I have heard that story, and like, it's just the most wholesome Mr. Rogers story out of like a litany of wholesome Mr. Rogers stories. But yeah, I had heard that one. It's just great.
It really is. It's so good. He's such a good man.
Have you seen the movie with Tom Hanks? I have not.
I have not seen it yet. No.
Okay.
Mr.
Rogers is great.
We may have just found our viewing.
We might have to watch that one. You are a former resident of New York City. I am a resident that lives near to New York City and has worked in New York City for a long time. Do you know what Times Square was called before it was called Times Square?
No, I do not.
Ah, okay. Times Square was called Longacre Square, which is named after London's carriage district. Times Square was renamed so in 1904 after the New York Times moved their headquarters to a brand new building at 1475 Broadway, which is also known as One Times Square.
There you go. That's very interesting. I did not.
The next time you're in the city and surrounded by tourists and people in costume, you can thank the New York Times.
That's wild. I did not include this fact, but did you know that there is a breed of ant that only exists within Manhattan?
I have heard that story. Yes.
I found that wild while researching today, and I was like, that's not interesting enough to include, but now it is now. It all ties together.
Love it.
I don't know where to go with this. Did you know that there's a small population of mammoths that survived on the Wrangel Island until, you know, about 1650 is roughly where they died off. There weren't photos and cameras back then to document it. No Facebook. But it's about 900 years after the construction of the Great Pyramids. So it's weird to think that there were still woolly mammoths just walking around and shit after the pyramids.
That's wild.
I didn't know.
Okay.
6-year-old me got really excited.
Okay. Well, then you're going to love this one. You, as well as I assume most of the known universe, has seen the movie Madagascar.
Yes.
Okay. In case you haven't seen the movie, or just to refresh your memory, there's a lot of lemurs on Madagascar, which is real. There are a lot of lemurs in Madagascar. Did you know that up until about 500 or 600 years ago, there was a species of lemur on Madagascar that was the size of a gorilla?
No, but I want to hug one. That sounds amazing.
So just the next time you're watching anything Madagascar related, just picture giant gorilla sized lemurs as in the cast, like in the movie, instead of the like cat sized lemurs. I think, man, that would be a very different movie, but I would equally enjoyable. Because like, could you imagine like Sacha Baron Cohen and Cedric the Entertainer, like their characters as lemurs, but like as giant gorilla sized lemurs?
That's amazing.
I think that would be hilarious.
That's amazing. I read today, and again, this is another fact that I didn't include that I also can't confirm whether or not it's true, but I read today that in China, there are breeds of pigs that are the size of small bears.
Wait, so are they big pigs or are, like, I'm trying to figure out what this has broken my brain. So they're just very large pigs, but like a small bear is already the size of a pig. Like I'm confused. My brain hurts.
I think they mean by small bear, I think they mean like a small brown bear. Let me look. Big pig, China, bear sized. This is what I'm Googling.
This is
the most efficient Google ever.
Well, see, that's the thing, though. Google will figure that shit out.
Giant pigs, size of polar bears being bred in China. So we should.
Okay, see, polar bears, that's not the same thing.
How big is a polar bear? I don't know how big a polar bear is. A
polar bear is fucking huge. Have you ever seen a polar bear?
I mean,
polar bear is very large.
Oh, so you're saying like not a koala sized bear. I get you. I understand. Let's not hold up the podcast here, but let's definitely let's revisit this in the beginning of the next episode.
Okay. We'll do some research about these polar bear sized pigs in China
that you, I quote, have called fucking huge. If the next episode of this podcast isn't called fucking huge pigs, I'm going to be disappointed.
It's not going to be, but we can talk. We can revisit.
All right, cool.
Okay. My last one for you actually gets back to our space topic from earlier. I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
What do you think moon trees are?
Well, I don't know, because I've never heard the phrase moon trees. I hope that it. Oh, my God. I don't. Just tell me. I'm so excited.
OK, so Moon trees were trees that were grown from seeds that were brought to space on Apollo 14. So this was in, I didn't write down the year. This was a joint mission between NASA and the U.S. Forest Service. There were three members on the Apollo 14 crew, as there is on all the other Apollo missions. Two were astronauts, Alan Shepard, very famous, Edgar Mitchell, who I'm sorry, I didn't know who Edgar Mitchell was, but he was the other astronaut. The third guy on the crew was an engineer and Forest Service smoke jumper by the name of Stuart Roosa. Stuart Roosa, in his belongings on Apollo 14, had seeds, like in a thing. He brought them to space. This was on purpose, by the way. They weren't like contraband seeds. Brought them to space. Then when they came back to Earth, the seeds were germinated, like they sprouted. And then from those sprouts, they were cut off and they were made into like 400 seedlings that were then planted all over the world. Like they were like donated to countries and they were made into, they were like put in national parks and things like that. In fact, get ready to have your mind blown.
Oh God.
There is one of these moon trees 90 minutes from you right now.
Oh no, now I have to go on a road trip.
Elizabethton, Tennessee. In Elizabethton, Tennessee is the Sycamore Shoals State Park. At the Sycamore Shoals State Park is one of these moon trees.
All right. We will be broadcasting live from the moon tree soon.
So I need you in your next free 90 minutes to go out to Elizabethton and report back on the health and well-being of this moon tree.
I will. I will send you a selfie, too. I have scrapped my last bit of trivia for this one that this one that I've just Googled, because you've talked about space a lot. So I wanted to talk about this instead of what I have written down over there. And that is that as a trained geologist who went into space, literally the last man to walk on the moon, Harrison Schmitt, was allergic to moon dust.
Okay, there's no scratch test for moon dust.
No, that's not.
How are you? I have so many questions.
It says when he returned to the landing module, dust from his spacesuit was transferred into the cabin, causing an instant allergic reaction.
That is wild.
It's pretty crazy. Can you imagine spending your entire life training, like physically training, mentally training, to go into space? And then the universe is like, no, bitch, you're allergic to space.
Wow. I mean, that is hilarious for us, but also sad.
It's pretty heartbreaking.
But like, that's to be fair, that's like a once in a lifetime thing. If you're going to be allergic for one day, I mean, I don't know how long the reaction lasted, but like, okay. Wow. Allergic to space dust. That is wild.
Didn't have that on your bingo card, did you?
No, sure didn't.
Nope.
You sure didn't. I hope that he wasn't. I don't know. I want to say it that way. Here's what I was going to say was that if he was like a futurist and like really into space and space technology, and that he was hoping that his mission like hypothetically could have led to like future advances in space, where like in the next 10 years everyone's living in space, and then he's allergic to space, and he's like, oh man. Can't go to space anymore.
I'm going
to
make this story both better and sadder.
Oh,
he wasn't going to space anymore. He was 84 when this happened. So that's uncomfortable. But
okay,
he'd pretty much lived most of his life at this point. So he didn't have to be sad that he would never go back to space. So
okay,
I'm happy that he got to experience space as a 84-year-old man.
Wow. I mean, I'm insert redacted age here. I am nowhere near physically fit enough to go to space. So my hat is off to him for getting in that kind of shape.
I'm barely fit enough right now to get up and walk to the bedroom.
Hi, Josh from the future here with a quick update. Harrison Schmitt was 37 at the time he went to space, not 84. He is currently 84 years old and alive and well, from what Wikipedia tells me. Also, I can confirm that both Josh and I are now older than Harrison Schmitt at the time he went to space. So what the hell are we doing with our lives? Okay, back to the show. Oof. Okay, this has been wonderful. I am very excited to hear your future report from the space tree, the moon tree, excuse me.
Yes. Are you ready for bonus trivia?
Oh, that's right. I totally forgot.
It's
okay. There's bonus stuff happening. I'm ready.
It's going to be amazing. I have come across in my research some really weird laws that exist right now in a couple of states. I'm just going to run through them. Here we go.
Okay.
In Arizona, it is illegal to this day for a donkey to sleep in a bathtub. I don't know why. It's my kind of party, though. In Arkansas, you aren't allowed to honk your horn near a sandwich shop after 9 p.m., which I think is fair. You're just trying to enjoy a nice...
I think that's just common decency.
Yeah, it's just...
Let people enjoy their sandwiches already.
It's just polite.
Yeah.
In Nebraska, you aren't allowed to get married if you have a venereal disease. We don't have to unpack that one. It speaks for itself.
Okay. Let's move on.
In New Jersey, bulletproof vests are banned while committing a crime. They are legal at all other times.
What?
Yep.
I feel like some weird logic mixed up into that.
We can talk about that when we talk about the huge fucking pigs too.
Okay.
In North Carolina, drunk bingo is illegal. Sober bingo's fine.
But like, where's the line? I feel like that's very subjective.
Are you asking if tipsy bingo is okay? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
You have to like blow into a breathalyzer. You're like B4 and they're like, Edna, shut up. You're drunk.
Sorry, Edna.
All right. Two more. In South Carolina, you are not allowed to play pinball if you're a minor.
I mean, pinball's a gateway drug. We all know that.
It is. This one is very important. This last one. In Tennessee, it is 100% illegal to share your Netflix password.
I feel like you're asking for trouble here because you are literally in Tennessee right now.
And I literally share my Netflix password.
Why is it illegal? Okay, where about the one with the donkey? That was like, that's like a lost How I Met Your Mother episode.
That's true. We can research why all of these laws came into being. It could be a podcast of its own, I swear to you.
Oh, man. All right. Well, we're going to try and not break any more laws, at least until the next time we record, because that would be really awkward. Coming to you live from the state penitentiary, the Untitled Josh Cast. No, let's not do that. Okay. This episode has taken a turn. I hope you have enjoyed it. If you have enjoyed this podcast and all of the shenanigans that we got up to here and all the fun stuff that we uncovered about space and the flag and weird laws in Arizona, if you would please leave us a nice rating or review on Apple Podcasts and or follow on Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you happen to listen, those things would really help us out. If you would like to follow the show and stay up to date with what is happening on our little show here, you can find us on both Twitter and Instagram at JoshCastPod, and you can follow us on Twitch at twitch.tv/UntitledJoshCast. If you would like to support the show financially, you can do so at patreon.com/UntitledJoshCast. This show is written and hosted by me, Josh Gershman, and Josh Hammond. It is edited by me, and it is produced by Ryland James. The podcast's intro music is Gemini by Alki, and the outro music is Cautious by Amorosa. Both appear on the Untitled Josh Cast with permission from the artists. We hope you have enjoyed this episode of the Untitled Josh Cast. Thank you so very much for listening. Until next time. I got to be cautious.